Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today our theme is abandonment, which we can find in all the world's traditions, whether psychological or spiritual, because I think we all in some sense feel abandoned in some way. And the book that we're talking about is called The Abandonment Recovery Workbook, and how we can move through the five stages to healing from abandonment, heartbreak, and loss. Joining me is a psychotherapist and author, Susan Anderson. She's the founder of the Abandonment Recovery Movement and has 30 years' experience in working with victims of trauma, grief, and loss. Her books include The Journey from Abandonment to Healing and Taming Your Outer Child. I want to find out more about the outer child. That sounds fascinating. Her current book is The Abandonment Recovery Workbook, which is a reworking of a book that came out a decade or so ago. Fascinating book. It really is a workbook because you can study it at depth, which I'm in the middle of doing, actually. And it offers 12 lessons to help us move through the stages of healing. And so it's a pleasure to welcome Susan Anderson to today's show. Welcome, Susan.
Well, thanks. I'm happy to be here.
You know, in a sense, to be alive is to feel abandoned, isn't it?
It is, because we're born with the birth trauma. We're born from this wonderful, at peace, homeostatic place where all of our needs were met. And then aliveness. We're born out into the cold world where we suddenly feel this abrupt change, and then we go through all of these changes where we're picked up by someone and coddled in their arms and nursed and made to feel comfortable again, and then once again we go back to a crib, and then we feel scared and cold and wet again and hungry, and then yet again we're picked up. So we go through connection and disconnection, and we learn to really be vulnerable to the idea that someone could leave us alone with no one to take care of our needs.
Right.
It is universal, and you can't be alive without having some kind of sensitivity to the primal abandonment fear.
Yeah, my daughter just gave birth for the second time last week, and so we're enjoying the newborn. But it's exactly as you say, you know, obviously the child enjoyed it in the womb, and now spends most of its time, his time, either sleeping or eating, you know, with eyes closed, because it's still kind of getting used to this idea that, where am I? You know,
yeah.
I should still be back in this womb, so I'm not quite ready to look out into space. And he opens his eyes occasionally and then looks around, you know, I don't think they have focus at this age particularly, and then goes immediately back, you know, the eyes close up again. It's hard, isn't it? It's hard to be introduced to this world. And many of us think that, you know, that we are lost in space. You know, that's another form of abandonment. We've been abandoned to this crazy, mystery-filled and often horrific universe that we're living in.
Yes, Yes, we're thrust out here, and we're forced to face survival, and some of us have very, very difficult conditions, physical conditions to survive. We may have physical disabilities, or there could be a drought or war. All kinds of dilemmas face the human being as we are suddenly left to survive it. And we use our survival instinct to somehow manage the fear that we have all the going through, which is the primal fear of, you know, of dying, of being, of annihilation, of abandonment, and then we somehow build some kind of life within that structure.
Right. I remember being very influenced by a book called The Sheltering Sky, which I think they made into a movie. It's by the author Paul Bowles, and he lived for many years in Morocco, in Tangier. And the concept, the image of the sheltering sky is that we have this image of safety that we cocoon ourselves with, but outside of that safety is this chaos of the universe itself. So we have the sheltering sky, but it really is masking this vastness. Now,
yes.
The thing about that, though, is that the vastness is doesn't have to be scary, right? It's part of God's. If you want to look at it theologically, as Einstein said, is the universe friendly? If the universe is friendly, then beyond the constructs of comfort that we create for ourselves, there is still safety, right? That we are still looked after by some kind of order here.
Yes. Well, and there's also the fact that there's the great wonder, the great excitement of the wonder of it all.
Yes.
That we're in the midst of this endless, this infinite, eternal space. How did this come to be? There's this tremendous excitement and exhilaration that we can gain just from the gift of having whatever time we have here, of having that gift.
So we like to say in Unity that the very thing that seems to limit us is the very same thing that frees us, that it's just a question of looking at it differently.
Yes.
And so rather than trying to avoid being abandoned, which, is impossible because that's, as we said, that's the nature of being alive, it's looking at it in a different way, right?
Yes. It's accepting it because, people come to my workshops and read my books hoping to find love insurance, that somehow there's some special way that they can prevent themselves from ever being abandoned or that they can choose someone who will never, ever abandon them. And, of course, there is no love insurance. We take the risk of making attachments knowing that death can separate us, loss of romantic feelings can separate us, all kinds of things can happen. But when we really embrace abandonment as part of being human and as something that we must learn to accept and learn to accommodate, then we can take the risks that are involved in having a connected life because we have it covered. We've done the work and we know how to recover. We'll still maybe have hurt and pain from certain experiences, of course, that's all part of life, but we'll be able to recover more quickly rather than be damaged and devastated, indefinitely.
Yes, absolutely. There's so many resonances in your book with the book we're studying right now in church as part of our home study groups. We're doing Brené Brown's Daring Greatly. And it dovetails nicely because, she talks about vulnerability leading to courage, the courage to live a fearless life, to dare greatly, if you like. And I think that's so true, isn't it? It's what you're talking about also is, the vulnerability that comes from abandonment is doesn't need to be a detrimental thing. It can be an awesome way through to a greater sense of who we are.
It is. It's humbling, and it makes us realize that we're part of the human condition, and it gives us sort of a Velcro surface that allows us to connect to one another because we look at each other through a lens that has felt this kind of terror, this pain, this loss, and we can have compassion for other people. It is a great gift. During the time that you're suffering through it, it doesn't feel like much of a gift. But if you learn how to handle the feelings at each phase of the process, it's a process that breaks down into five phases. And if you learn how to handle the feelings as you go through this process, you learn how to become a very transformed person, stronger and more compassionate and more capable of love and connection than before.
Yes.
But the key is to accept those feelings, to work with the feelings.
Well, and I think we're faced with this in our society. You know, every single day, it seems another atrocity is committed somewhere in the world, and often, unfortunately, in our own home here in America, if we're listening and we're from America. But certainly, parts of the world that seem to be in flames, like the Middle East and parts of Africa. And, you know, the troubles is in Charlotte now as we show is going on the air, and another craziness, and just the building up to the presidential election, you know, and all this writ large there, it can have us off kilter, I think. You know, we can lose touch with the idea that we are safe, and it almost the media feeds this frenzy, doesn't it, of keeping us confused here, and so we can feel abandoned by our own society in a way.
Yes, it's very easy to become confused, and the media, of course, does feed it because it creates news, and there's a market for news.
Right.
But to stay focused on what's the most essential, what's the most important thing, is really the key of abandonment recovery. And the most important thing that helps to integrate all of it together is to have a love focus. So I'm not speaking of a romantic love, of course. I'm speaking more of a spiritual love, of a love that is general and can be directed to the self and to the world outside. And that integrates all the other work that we do to work with those feelings that have been, you know, triggered by going through an abandonment experience.
Right. Yeah, the Dalai Lama says, my religion is kindness, right? And that was what my mother used to tell me when she wasn't a very religious person. She was a bit of an iconoclast and sort of railed against some of the church. But she said, you know, if there's one word that sums it up for me, it's kindness, being kind to each other. And I think that's similar to what you're saying, isn't it? It's the compassionate, loving stance towards ourselves, first of all, but then towards others as well, right?
Well, when you go through abandonment, let's say you've been rejected by someone you love,
it's very
painful, but it brings you in touch with the abandoned inner child within. It's an image that we create using our imagination, this abandoned inner child, but we extend love to that. We learn how to administer behaviorally through the exercise program outlined in the workbook and the other books, we learn how to administer to that abandoned inner child. And when we get a real sense of who we are internally, and abandonment will give it to us because we'll be feeling it all, we then can relate to other people with more sensitivity. We can actually relate to somebody who may be even doing something that's bothersome or difficult or aggressive. But if we look at them as they have an inner child too, and if we can relate to that part of them, very often we can really reduce the amount of conflict between people.
Yes,
in a love relationship, in a marriage or a bond of some sort, having the two people or the however many people are involved in a close group of friends, be kind to each other's inner child, because we're all vulnerable. That is very, very rewarding and creates intimacy and trust in relationships.
You know, there's a quote that's going around right now that seems to be attributed to and many different people. I've heard it attributed to Goethe and to Eastern philosophers. I don't know who actually came up with it, but it's a wonderful quote, and it's be gentle because everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. And it's the same idea, isn't it? I love that idea that, once we understand that we're all struggling here, we're all having to fight a great fight, and it's an inner fight with our own abandonment issues, then we're more gentle, we're less critical of others because we realize, my goodness, you know, they're going through just as hard a time as I am. You know?
Yes. Well, you know, you can have someone, someone who's very confident, who just never really had yet been brought to their knees. Life has just been kind to them, and they've just had one positive experience after another. and they can actually become a little insensitive and cocky and even maybe commit abandonment, you know, walk away from relationships somewhat heartlessly. There are people like that. But when something punches them in the stomach, such as they lose a relationship through death or the person that they love has, you know, left them for someone else perhaps, even the most confident, seemingly callous people can be brought to their knees, and afterward, they are now part of the human condition. They recognize their place among other people and develop greater sensitivity. Of course, to be able to sustain that, they need to really work with those feelings and not forsake those feelings because, of course, a lot of people, when they finally come through the grief process of abandonment, they just want to leave those feelings behind because they're so unpleasant.
Yes.
But of course, the goal is to stay in touch with those feelings, cherish them, nurture them. They are your abandoned inner child, and that allows you to have tremendous self-love and compassion for other people.
Yeah, I think one of the saddest, I agree totally what you're saying, but I think one of the saddest things that can happen is that, you know, when these people do sort of have an awakening to the fact that it's not all hunky-dory, you know, they become cynical, and then that furthers their kind of being shut off from the world. And I think that's the saddest thing we can ever be, isn't it, is cynical about life. And
yes, they can become cynical and more detached than before. And then the factor of abandonment, especially where rejection is involved, is a wound of the ego. It's an ego wound. Even to those of us who don't consider ourselves to have, you know, much egotism, it's still an ego wound. It still hurts and it makes us doubt ourselves. Well, somebody who's been confident all along and has had an image and a position in society may become extremely defensive, all in defense of the ego. When, for instance, when a celebrity is left by, you know, a public breakup where somebody feels abandoned, where, you know, I can think of examples, but let's not get into the
details. Yeah, right. That's what's going on right now.
Right. You know, our favorite movie star was flat left by her husband for another woman. Okay, they don't get on television and show their sadness. They don't cry and say, I feel so hurt, I feel so abandoned. They show dignity by showing anger, because it isn't dignified to show the vulnerability publicly. But hopefully those same movie stars who have to show this public facade of anger and outrage and, you know, don't get angry, get even. That's it. When they show that side, okay, that's fine. But hopefully those people have intimate friends and people who can support them where they can really tell the truth, which is, I am on my knees, I am hurt, I am wounded. And that is a beautiful moment, so that even if people return to defending their ego and their image, if they remember what they felt and can carry those feelings forward, they will have been transformed.
Yes. You know, I want to share something that happened to me last week about this, because as I was waiting for my daughter to give birth, and she was about 10 days late, some of the heartbeat in the baby was going down occasionally. And, you know, that was a little disturbing. And so I got quite nervy the day before she was born. And it was because there was a knot in the umbilical cord. It wasn't serious enough to hurt the child, but it was enough for them to want to, you know, bring the child on and get the birth going. But yeah. I remember being extremely emotional. I remember crying, actually. I cried at lunch with my wife. And, and I realized what it was. It was my sister died when I was seven. She was five. She had severe mental retardation from mistakes done in the birthing process. And my first child died from a disease in the womb, and so it came from this incredibly deep place, you know, this sense of being the loss and abandonment and losing the child, and I thought, wow, you know, that's a gift really, because it's allowed me to see that again, and to be honest about it. And after that had been experienced, you know, then I was okay again to go back and say, "And now there's no reason why this has to be the same way now, you know.
Yeah.
This child is healthy and my daughter's healthy and all is well, and it worked out well. So, but what a gift that was, it seems, for me to experience that. You know, it wasn't much fun at the time. It was a bad day, actually. But
yeah.
I look back and say, no, that was actually a powerful day.
Well, you know, you give such a good illustration, because here there was a knot in the umbilical cord, and that knot triggered, it was a threat. It was a trigger that reminded you of previous threats to real losses.
Yes.
And so all of the previous experiences that are cumulative, you know, that haven't necessarily been relevant until that moment that the knot produced that feeling of feeling threatened, you know, something that you're counting on could be threatened, and all it comes rushing in. But in making that connection and also sharing it, being able to make the connection to the previous losses and then sharing it and owning it and feeling it helped you move forward.
Yes. Yeah. It was a powerful, it would make a good story, you know, a good article or whatever, because it was definitely a shift experience, and those are always powerful. Yeah, so, thank you for indulging me in sharing that. But I actually feel the same. I could feel the emotions welling up again, you know, just talking about it. Interesting how it's still there for you, isn't it? Some people say, oh, you can completely, you know, release it and move beyond it. I don't believe that. Do you? That, you know, part of what makes us have a unique flavor is that we still carry these things. They're no longer unresolved, perhaps, but they're still there for us, right, as long as we're in this particular
human
form.
Well, the amygdala, the part of the brain that is responsible for emotional memory, not the memory of the event itself, but the way it felt, that part of the brain, most of what conditions, if you want to use that word, that most of what, you know, is recorded is conditions, the emotional brain, the amygdala, is indelible.
So right.
It's there, and we can't deny that it's there. It may be sort of dormant because nothing is triggering it. Nothing is creating that sense of threat. So we forget, or we don't, you know, we're not in touch with how easily those feelings can be activated. So we think they've actually dissipated, but actually they haven't. They're still there.
Yeah,
they're part of us, and we can deal with them when they're triggered. We have to be able to own them and face them and understand them, but we can deal with them.
Yes, very good. Excellent. If you're just tuning in, I'm with Susan Anderson, and we're talking about issues brought up in a wonderful workbook. It's called The Abandonment Recovery Workbook, Guidance Through the Five Stages of Healing from Abandonment, Heartbreak, and Loss. And as we've established, we've all felt some kind of abandonment, heartbreak, or loss in our lives. Otherwise, we wouldn't be human beings. And to be alive is to risk, and to risk is sometimes to suffer. The Buddha said there's two kinds of suffering, the first and second arrows. The first arrow is where you hurt. The second arrow is where you internalize that hurt and make it a story. And this book really is helping us release the story, isn't it? Release the fact that I'm stuck with this horrible feeling. You know, it may have happened, but it doesn't mean it conditions me forever.
Well, at first, without the recovery process, what people tend to do is exactly the opposite of what they need to do, because healing, when it comes to the abandonment wound, doesn't come naturally to most people. So people get into story, and, you know, the typical pattern is you analyze and you ruminate and you go over the events of the breakup and you go through it with all your friends, you talk their ears off.
Yeah.
Because you just can't get enough of it. You're obsessing about the relationship. But, of course, that doesn't help the matter. You may come up with some ideas, or, you know, you may have some practical things that you come up with, but most of that works opposite to healing. Healing is something far more sublime. It's actually in the body, but we don't necessarily know to do the right work when we're going through it, because the cerebral cortex wants to take the job over and, you know, turn it into this whole analytic process.
Yes.
So it's really a matter of there's a lot of acceptance and working with the feelings that are in the body that actually have to take place.
Yeah, very good. All right, when we come back from the break, we'll talk about how we can do this, what this process is, and we're going to actually enjoy a swirl. So come back in a couple of minutes and we'll have a swirl together, all right?
As Unity Online Radio continues to expand its programming and outreach to the world, we count on the support of listeners like you. Please make your donation today. Go to www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now.
Kintsugi is an ancient Japanese art form of fusing broken pottery pieces together by filling the cracks with gold. The resulting piece is not only restored and visually stunning, it also takes on a new life. Whatever has happened in the past, however broken we may feel, we can be whole again by filling our lives with the transformative power of God. Our experiences make us unique. The presence of God makes us whole. As Paul wrote in his letter to the Romans, be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Remember, with God, all things are possible.
This Mindful Moment is brought to you by Daily Word Magazine. Finding time for the positive reminders in Daily Word is easy with the digital edition, perfect for smartphones and readers on the go. Take advantage of our 30-day free trial to the online magazine, plus a daily email with the word for the day and the Daily Word app. To sign up for a free 30-day trial, visit unityonlineradio.org/dailyword.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. And by the way, check out my new article that just came out of the Unity Leaders Journal. I'm going to put it up on my – it's already up on my Facebook, and I'll put it up on my website. It's about how to stay true to the truth in times of tragedy and loss and terror. So check that article out. It just came out yesterday, so I'm excited about it. I'm with Susan Anderson. We're talking about her great book, The Abandonment Recovery Workbook. And I promised you a swirl. So the swirl is the five-step process of moving through these issues in order to come to some kind of actualizing of a healthy mindedness and healthy emotions, the whole thing. And it reminds me in some ways of as the stages of grief that Kubler-Ross famously put out. There's a sort of a correlation, isn't there, Susan?
Yes, the loss is loss. So The stages of grief over a death are very similar to the stages of grief over abandonment. And so to honor Kubler-Ross, I had the stages break down into five overlapping phases.
Right.
She has five, so I have five in honor of her. But they are similar and yet differ in significant ways. In abandonment, where rejection is a factor, then there's an additional wound, because it is the wound of I'm not worthy enough. So the grief is flavored by that factor.
Right. So walk us through the five steps, then, the five.
Well, the five phases are shattering, withdrawal, internalizing, rage, and lifting, and they spell swirl. And if that's how you go through that process. You swirl through it. If you've had a great big huge loss, such as a long-term relationship ended because you've been rejected by this person that you love, then the you swirl through. It's like a cyclone. You're swirling through the five stages. Very rapidly, and within an hour, within a week, within a month, within a year, cycles within cycles. You know, you're overlapping in from one to the next.
Right.
And so shattering is the first phase, and that's when you feel the rug pulled out from underneath you. You feel the threat to your security, and you feel like a pane of glass has been shattered. You're just shattered. And then in withdrawal, you're like in heroin withdrawal. You're yearning for love and connection and acceptance, and you can't get it. And you feel these awful emotional hunger and yearning it's a very unhappy period. And if you came from a childhood where there was already those feelings, let's say your parents were alcoholic and you didn't get to have your needs met, you know, you spent a lot of time wanting attention that you couldn't get, then when you go through it as an adult, withdrawal will be a difficult phase to go through. And then the next stage, the middle phase, is the internalizing. And that's where you take the rage that you feel about being rejected and you turn it against yourself. And you beat yourself up and you get this very severe depression. And the depression is all about, I'm not lovable, I'm not attachment worthy, why do people throw me away? Why didn't my friend return my phone call? Why did I get fired? You know, all of this, it's all being taken personally, and you're damaging your own self-esteem. And this is really what differentiates abandonment grief from the kinds of grief that Kubler-Ross was describing. And then in the fourth phase, it's rage. You're no longer just flailing in sort of, you know, impotent rage. You're now angry at the situation you're in. You're furious with your friends for saying stupid things like just let go and move forward, because if it were that simple, you'd have already done it. You're angry at your abandoner or your boss if he fired you, or your friend if you've been neglected. You're angry, but you might, if you're an abandonment survivor from childhood, you know, you've had, let's say your parents went through a divorce. So many things in childhood can create, you know, abandonment feelings.
Right.
If you've had that problem, you tend to be codependent and people-pleasing, so you might be afraid to vent your anger directly at the abandoner because you don't want to lose any more crumbs of approval that you want every bit of drop that you can get. But you still feel rage at yourself, at others, at life. You know, you're flailing in a more, you know, combative way. And then during the lifting phase, that's when you need to take your feelings with you. That's what we talked about, where people can lose touch with themselves and become more remote than before because they're so anxious to get rid of the feelings. They're such horrible feelings. They just want to leave it behind and find somebody else and patch it themselves up, put on a new mask, and go forward. But the key is when you do go through lifting, you lift out of the abandonment, you want to take that hard-won vulnerability with you. You've learned about yourself. You've gotten in touch with yourself, and you've gotten in touch with the ability to love yourself and nurture yourself. You want to bring that with you so that you can find deeper, greater connection and love than before, not just with a new partner or a new job, but with yourself and with the world outside of you. So you want to be transformed by the experience.
It's almost as if you've given up looking. You know, it's like you're satisfied with yourself at that stage. And it seems to me that's often when we find a new relationship is when we give up looking for it. You know, it's because we're no longer pushing it, making it happen, right?
Well, by the way, when we learn how to love ourselves and to tend to our own, you know, this exercise that helps that to happen is a dialogue that where you adopt your inner child and you administer to your inner child behaviorally. But when we learn how to do that, what we're learning is how to complete our own loop, how to give ourselves approval, how not to rely on external validators, how to give ourselves love so that we're not overly dependent on our bosses, on our friends, on our lovers to make us feel secure or to give us that approval that we seek. We give ourselves those things to some extent at least so that we don't have to lay them at other people's feet. It helps us become emotionally self-reliant.
Right, exactly. You know, there's a term we use in Unity now that I don't think it's unique to Unity, but that is spiritual bypassing, you know, which is where you rush to conclusion before you've worked through the process. And it's very important that you work all these stages, isn't it? Otherwise, you're trying to spiritually bypass things to get to a conclusion. You know, I don't want to deal with it. As Brené Brown says, you know, I don't do vulnerability. Well, you know, there's no such thing as there as I don't do vulnerability. If you're a human being, you do vulnerability. Yeah.
Well, there's an awful lot of stuff out there that allow you to do the spiritual bypass. You can, for instance, you know, you can overconsume. You can do drugs, alcohol, shop. You can watch television until your eyes cross. There's so many things you can do to excess in order to stay distracted.
Right.
You can also, you know, find a new relationship right away just to have a new distraction.
Yeah.
There are so many ways to avoid having to deal with the feelings. And my recommendation isn't, okay, don't look for new people, you know, stay home and work on your feelings. I don't say that. I say live life. Look for distraction. That's what the outside world is for. But bring your feelings with you. Don't use the distractions of life as a substitute for administering to these feelings because they've been awakened and they're asking you to administer to them and to love them and accept them and to work with them. So do use the world around you to find pleasure and to find connection. But also work with the feelings. Do them at the same time. That's
right.
What can work.
You know, in the Tibetan tradition, there's a big interest in the bardos. You know, and it's in Western appreciation of that. I think we just limit the bardos to after you die. You know, and bardo simply means between times. But I think all of life, there's between times, right? Between this moment and the next, between the end of something and how we resolve that. I think you're referring to that with this word akeru, right? Which is
exactly,
a Japanese,
yes, exactly.
Japanese
That's
term.
Exactly it.
It's the, you know, there's a book in Unity by a wonderful Unity author called, by Alan Davenport called, Hell in the Hallway, Hope at the Door. And it's a great book, but I just disagree probably with that premise, you know, that I don't think it's hell in the hallway. I think actually it's heaven in the hallway because it's in those moments of unknowing, those moments of uncertainty that give us the greatest strength and power, right? Because that's those moments where we're not seemingly in control, when the ego can't fix it, you know, when we're not in charge, and yet something within us, something much more creative, is in charge.
Yeah, all of the great spiritual healers are people who have been to the to Gethsemane to go through the underworld. I mean, there's so many stories that take people into tremendous adversity and pain. Because that's where the strength is discovered. Because there's such a thing, and strength and compassion and you know, the becoming powerful with healing. There's such a thing as post-traumatic growth. We all know post-traumatic stress disorder, but there's post-traumatic growth. And you can't avoid picking up a little post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, we're alive and we're being affected by the things that happen to us. It's just natural, and we have to accept that, okay, some of the emotions that we feel are overreactions because of what happened to us earlier, and we can accept that. But we also want to pick up post-traumatic growth because, you know, we're stronger where the breaks are. That's where we really have the bends, the knuckles, you know, the elbows. In, if we think of ourselves as a twig, that's where the interesting formation of the bends in the twig. You know, we're gorgeous bonsai trees because we have these beautiful bends and knuckles in our growth. And those, that's where we're strongest, and that's what makes us most interesting and most compassionate.
Yeah, there's another term in Japanese called wabi-sabi, you know, which is similar to what you're talking about. You know, it's the transience and imperfection of things which give it its most beautiful quality. And it's sort of counterintuitive, isn't it? The fact that we are in the midst of dying, all of us, once you're born, you're dying, gives us full life. You know, if we think that, oh, well, I don't want to even think about dying, you've missed the point of being alive. You know, you have to rest in both of those. And I think some of the greatest, you know, art, you know, in Japan comes out of that idea of this perfect imperfection, if you like.
Yes. Well, you know, a face that's completely 100%, you know, symmetrical, like, let's say, a woman's face who's considered, who's, you know, striving for beauty. Beauty isn't a perfect face. Beauty isn't a Barbie doll. Beauty is where there is an imperfection, an asymmetry, and that offsets other features. It's the flaw that creates the beauty. And it's true for us, too. What makes us interesting is how we're each uniquely flawed. And
yes.
When we're humble and in touch with it, we can celebrate that and really connect with each other and accept each other as being flawed. We all have limitations. We all have lackings and inadequacies and shortcomings. And they're to be celebrated because they make us human and they bring us into contact with other people who are equally human.
Yeah. Beautiful, actually, isn't it? It's almost like you want to take a big breath out. You know, it's like a relief that I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to measure up to, you know, be somebody that's either physically or spiritually or intellectually perfect. I'm okay just as I am. You know, as long as I'm open and striving for authenticity, you know, that's the key, I think.
Yes, for real self-honesty.
Yeah.
You know, when I bring a group of people together in an abandonment workshop, and it could be a large group of 60 people or more, and everybody's gathering around because of the word abandonment, they're all kind of admitting to, just by signing up for the workshop, they're all admitting to abandonment. And then we start to share, large group sharing, and then break down into small group sharing. But as soon as the sharing process starts, it is the most profound experience. It's what keeps me going, because people are so relieved to discover that they're part of the human race, that everybody is going through this. And all of that perfectionism that really is just not our friend, all of that perfectionism that some people may have been striving for, you know, leading up to the workshop, is just surrendered to the far more beautiful thing of joining other human beings with this common primal wound that we all share.
Right. You know, in a twisted way, I think maybe this idea is fueling support for one of our presidential candidates right now, because it's like we admire his outrageous statements. It's almost like he's mirroring back to us our own imperfections and our own yearnings and anger and everything. In reality, would we really want a leader, you know, that crazy? But for some reason, there's a sense of, see, he's just like us. You know, he's mirroring some of our own inadequacies and feelings of frustration. So I can understand why, you know, there's a certain attraction to it. Don't agree with it, but I think it's part of this in a way, but it's used in a less than healthy way for our society.
Well, we've elected a few presidents here in this country who have been, who feel like somebody, you know, as stupid as I am, or he's as plain spoken as I am, or he's just a regular guy, or oh, he put his foot in his mouth again, and oh, they're making fun of him, poor guy.
Yeah.
To arouse that kind of identification and sympathy. I don't know if people have sympathy. That might not be the right word this time, but they have identification. Finally, somebody allows us to be politically incorrect, and I don't have to feel guilty. And
exactly.
It's something so comforting for people to have that identification, and rather than, you know, striving a little bit higher to be led by someone we can't identify with, but who may have more talent than the average person. It's just it's a very, very interesting thing to look at from a global perspective.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think that's true with our spiritual leaders, too. You know, why so many gurus, for instance, are put up there on a pedestal, and yet they all seem to have an Achilles heel in some way. You know, they've had illicit love affairs or whatever they've done over the years. And I think it's impossible, isn't it, to have somebody that's just squeaky clean and has never been human, you know. And we're unwise to think we can have that. On the other hand, we don't want to shut our brains off and go along with some idiocy. It's like the Emperor's New Clothes, you know. Well, I'll go along with it because everybody else is. There's a balance here with anything.
There's a balance, but there's group dynamics and bandwagonism that goes on. So it's a tremendous effort to try to lead an authentic life. It's a worthwhile struggle to aim for the truth, to honor truth, and to live the life that's not based on, you know, popularism or what everybody else is thinking or doing. It's not led by the media. It is our own personal truth that we're striving for.
Now, in the book, there's 12 chapters, right? And there's 12 themes. So tell me, and I know we can't go into this in too much detail because we're towards the end of the show, but tell me the link between these 12 themes and the swirl, the five-step process. How does that
All right,
fit
well,
in?
It's an organizational nightmare. You know, when I first wrote the book, I just about had lost my mind trying to fold in the 12 lessons of abandonment recovery into five, you know, stages of abandonment, where there are exercises that go with each stage. So there were five basic, you know, hands-on exercises, and 12, and that was to honor the 12-step program. You know, more spiritual steps. But I did fold them in, and the way that they work out is that for each phase of the process, there are corresponding spiritual and emotional processes that are involved. So the 12 lessons of abandonment recovery focus on things such as being able to be into the moment and stay in the moment, and being able to cleanse, you know, psychologically, emotionally, cleanse your abandonment wound and create a sacred space within that doesn't have anybody else in there but you, you know, that your own personal truth. And then tuning into the reality that you're faced with without the story, taking it in one gulp instead of festering on all of the details, just facing the reality in one gulp and accepting it, and then recognizing that people, I'm oversimplifying the 12 steps, the 12 lessons, but accepting people as they are and not as who we need them to be, and that acceptance is a huge leap. And then finally, gathering all of this wisdom that we're gaining through the 12 lessons together and integrating it into a program that allows us to help ourselves and share it with other people. So those are the 12 lessons, and those fold in to the five exercises that are hands-on. You do them. They're very, you actually practice them, because when you recover from something like the abandonment wound, you're not getting rid of primal abandonment. We can't do that. It's primal. You're learning how to deal with it. And it's not about thinking your way out of it. It's about doing your way out of it. It's a behaviorally oriented approach. So the workbook makes it easy. So you go through the 12 lessons and the five exercises for each one of the stages of abandonment, and with a pen in your hand and with instructions for taking little tiny baby steps and so forth. and it guides you through so that this bewildering time of your life is made as easy as possible, because the path is just laid out for you to make it nearly effortless.
Yeah, very cool. And as Susan says, it's eminently practical. There's over 300 pages here. There's lots of exercises that you can partake in and sequentially and moving through. But it is a swirl, right? We're going to meet all these different aspects like you say, a 24-hour period. It's not like a linear path. It's more of a spiral, if you like.
Yes, it's spiral and it's repetitive and it's cycles within cycles and they overlap and you get stuck in some more than others, yes.
In 2 minutes, what is your outer child for you? What does that mean?
The outer child is the part of the personality that acts out self-sabotage. So when you have unresolved abandonment, you have sort of self-abandonment going on, and that means that you're succumbing to the need for immediate gratification and you're not taking care of your long-range goals. So you're doing things that feel great in the moment but not help you, such as you're avoiding, uncomfortable things. There are 5 phone calls that you're avoiding because they're too difficult, or you're procrastinating, or you're overspending, or you're indulging yourself.
Right.
So the outer child is the self-saboteur of the personality.
Right, because I deserve it, don't I?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We just have a few minutes left, and I want you to sum all this up. What advice would you give to somebody? They haven't read the book yet. They'd like to, perhaps. What advice would you give to any of us today to live a more authentic life? What immediate steps we could do?
Yes. The first thing is to recognize that if you have abandonment, if it's been triggered and you're having those feelings, there is help. And the second thing is to realize that the help is not thinking your way out of it. It's an active process. And if you really want to grow from this newly triggered set of emotions, you have to do the work, but yet it works. Do the work, and it actually works.
Yeah.
So that's the most important message, is there is hope. It is doable, but it's not by magic bullet.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, we like to say that in Unity. This stuff works. If you practice the principles, you're going to see results in your life. That's what I love about Unity, is it's a way of life, not just an observance on Sunday that has no relevance to the rest of our lives. And I think this book is eminently practical in that regard, too. If they want to find out more about you, I know you have a website. Can you lead us to that?
Abandonment.net. They can find their way. They can reach out to one of us. They can find out about all the books, the work that's
right.
included, and where the workshops are, all the appearances.
Right. Okay. Good. And you're based on the East Coast, but you travel widely, right?
Yeah, I do workshops wherever a group gathers and wishes to do the work, but mostly on the East Coast and the West Coast.
Right. Okay.
And Europe, different venues.
So Midwesterners like us have no interest in abandonment issues,
well,
right?
I do think that there have been quite a few efforts to create a program. I don't know if the venues are there. I've actually done Cleveland, which is going a little bit further west from me in New York.
Right.
And I'm willing to go to the Midwest anytime. Oh, I've done Arizona. I've done Arizona, which is pretty...
Well, you're closing the gap, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll do something at Unity Village one time,
Well, that would be lovely. I'd
there's
love
always
to.
Wonderful things going on there, and it'd be a great great venue for you.
Yeah.
And, of course, this book is published by the wonderful New World Library. I can't speak highly enough of that publishing outfit. They're wonderful.
They're the best.
They're the best, absolutely. And you can get it in all the usual outlets. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Susan. Next week, author, artist, leader in digital media, Jared Rosen joins me. He's written a book called, it's a memoir called Drowning in the Light, Memories of the New Age. So that should be fun, and a little different from this week. But this week has been absolutely fascinating. I recommend the book highly. Thank you so much, Susan, for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure.
All right. Thanks again, and thanks for listening, folks. Keep this voice of an awakening world on the air. Talk to you next week. All right, bye-bye.
This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Notice how the funniest things happen when we stop taking ourselves too seriously and step out boldly? Listen to Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed as these unlikely saints administer a refreshing dose of laughter and love that will inspire you to step out boldly and experience the funniest things. Join the discussion with Daryl and Ed live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central Time on Funniest Thing, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Peace in the presence of conflict. Love in the presence of hatred. Forgiveness in the presence of injury. These words are easy to say. It's challenging, though, to live them in everyday life. After all, I can make my words and actions peaceful, but I have no control over the words and actions of others. That's true, but think about it. If you, then I, then others, one by one, responded in love in every situation, the effect would be like the wave you see spread across a sports stadium. It would go on and on, gaining momentum as it moved through the people around us. I can let peace begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Just like life, grief is a journey, not a destination. Whether it is loss of life, relationship, security, or simply the process of change, have you given yourself permission to begin your journey of grief? Have you yielded to the gift of grace? Join Reverend Chaz Wesley every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central on a virtual navigation from grief to grace, and explore new horizons of empowerment, significance, and support. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'll light a candle in your name.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.